So we've been around for a really long time and moved out to Livingston in the 60s. And, you know, we were really focused on giving, like, helping students become engaged citizens and building generosity of spirit and global mindedness. So that's kind of our focus. We have an IB program, which I have taught in for the humanities department. And then the service program specifically started in the late 70s, early 80s, and has developed into one of the graduation requirements at the school now. So I have been the director of community service for the past 9 years, been at the school for 10 years, which is shocking to me. And our program does have an hours requirement, but is really grown to be a 6 through 12 program at this point. So we have students involved kind of in all different ways, which I'm sure we'll talk about.
Great. Well, yeah, why don't we just jump right into it and talk about how, what is the requirement for students? Like, you know, how, it's part of student life, right? And, mm-hmm. and so what's the requirements and the parameters around that? And then we can get into some examples about what students actually do.
Perfect. Yeah, so in our high school, we have a requirement for our 9th through 12th grade of 10 hours. And up until the pandemic, which obviously has changed all sorts of things, we had a requirement that you had to do at least 6 hours of direct service because we really think it's important for our students to engage with the community and to step outside their comfort zone and also just to not go to the kind of charity fundraising side of things. So we had a lot of students who were coming from their former schools or who involved in their temples and churches and kind of were continuing on with that, not really pushing their boundaries to kind of look at different issues and different communities. And so that's why we switched to that model. In the past, for the past 2 years, we've actually gotten rid of the, it's just been 10 hours because we're not going to force kids to get out to do face-to-face work, yeah. obviously, during a pandemic. But it's given us an opportunity to really sit and look at what that requirement looks like. So we're actually going to be moving to an outcomes-based model where we're going to have kind of focusing on the skills and kind of different aspects. So yes, that'll include direct and indirect, but we've also been doing a lot more advocacy work. And the like. So that's kind of the nuts and bolts of it. Students are required to report those hours. They're required to reflect on those hours. But I don't think that tells the full story. Most of our programs, as I said, there are 6 through 12. So normally, in a kind of normal year, non-COVID year, we're doing grade-wide service in the 6th, 7th, and 8th grade. In 8th grade, we actually have something called the Community Leadership Day. So when everyone else is taking PSATs, and the 6th and 7th graders are out doing various field trips, the 8th grade stays on campus, and we talk about their role as leaders in the middle school. What does that look like? What does ethical leadership look like? What is the responsibility to interact and engage with community, not only their community in the middle school, but their larger community at Newark Academy, and then obviously well beyond that. And that's tied to a service project. In the past, we've worked with First Friends of New York and New Jersey, doing some Stamp Out Despair post folders, which is a program they have for detainees in one of the 3 ICE detention facilities here in New Jersey. And so it's just putting together folders about that have like stamped envelopes and pieces of paper so that detainees can write to loved ones and actually stay connected as they're going through that process. So we have everything from that in middle school to our 7th grade. It also actually went out as a whole grade before the pandemic. And worked with the Interfaith Food Pantry of the Oranges. They were actually at, which is a choice facility, so you're actually walking around with the clients, helping them get the food, helping them choose. So it's not just handing out.
Right.
It's a little bit more interactive, paired with the service learning pieces of it. In the high school, I think it's important to recognize that all of our programming is really integrated into the school culture and the other programs. So I never think that my program stands alone because I think that's really unsuccessful. I've seen that in other schools and institutions I've worked with where you have kind of multiple people kind of having multiple smaller programs or programs that don't necessarily interact. We've worked really hard to make sure it's integrated. So we work with Equity Inclusion Office because all community service is an equity, inclusion, and diversity justice issue. We work with our Parents Association, and we work extensively with our Office of Student Life and the club program. We have a really active, especially in the high school, club program of students who are just really passionate, and they're actually leaders. They lead me more than once to different opportunities. And so it's really kind of ingrained, I think, in the whole spirit of what it is to be at Newark Academy. Hopefully.
Yeah, no, I love that. Well, and you said it like, and it's mirrored again in the corporate realm is where they've mm-hmm. talked about, you know, corporate social responsibility has been big in the last decade or so, but they're saying it, you know, you can't have it siloed in the HR department. It has to be, you know, it has to be embraced throughout the entire company culture, all leaders, all employees, all departments, whatever. So you're mirroring that in the school, which is good, right? And that,
definitely. We have something called June term, usually. Which is like 2 weeks at the end of school, which are experiential learning classes. And there are some service learning and service-based options, but some of them are social entrepreneurship and human rights and other things where they're actually talking about specifically corporate responsibility. I used to run one that was on the sociology of poverty. So there's like lots of kind of more intensive opportunities too to really look at that issue. But a lot of what we've been focusing on this year specifically as we look to changing towards an outcomes-based kind of requirement or it won't necessarily change the number of hours, but kind of how we talk about service and how we have our students reflect on and look at service is really thinking about what are those skills that service and community engagement and civic engagement help us build, right. and why is that important to like just being good people and like existing in the world, but also why is it important to the things we're passionate about? So I don't think there's anything wrong to say, hey, we've done a lot of service and recovery and rebuilding in New Orleans because that's where I'm from.
Oh.
So we've run service trips down there, and that's where the nonprofit kind of world I was involved in, so I had a lot of connections. And I like to bring people to the city whenever I can because, of course, I do. But I tell the kids all the time, like when we've gone down, I've purposely been like, oh, we're going to be rebuilding this house and learning how to tile. Let me learn how to do that, not only to help people build, you know, come into a house that after Katrina or wherever, but also because I want to learn how to tile and then I've gone to tile my own bathroom or help someone else, right?
Yeah.
So that there's no shame in that. I think that's really important to have that conversation. The other thing we're also constantly focusing on is what are the issues behind the service, right? So if you make a bunch of sandwiches and you hand out food one day, that's very important and obviously life-saving to those individuals. But those individuals are hungry later in the day and the next day. So how can we not only help in the immediate, but how can we look at the institutionalized power systems and the different power structures and kind of the history behind how that was created and advocate for change or work for change? And even if we can't do that now as students, like just building that passion and connecting it to what they're passionate about hopefully means that maybe they'll be, you know, the CEO of some corporation one day or a politician and be in a position to really make
Well, exposure is key, right? Even my kids, when they were toddlers, I'm like, I'm just exposing them to stuff and let the natural abilities and the interest and the whatever, you know, show itself. It's the same thing here. You got to have exposure, you know, because some people are like, well, you shouldn't have mandatory services. You know, I'm like, yeah, but if you aren't exposed to it, then you have no clue and you won't get into that. But I also like you talking about skill set because, you know, you may know more than I, but or more than me, but the focus has always been on academics, testing, mm-hmm. testing, scores, where the soft skills are not developed at all. Like, and that's where the compassion, empathy, talking to humans, you know, being human, feeling human, relating, interpersonal, like all those skills are what's, there's a giant dearth of those, of that development right now. And service is like the number one place to get it and go for it. And it's a win-win, right?
Yeah, definitely. Well, and I think, so it's interesting at Newark Academy, we've been focusing too on competencies, right? So we have the 6 C's competencies that are kind of like the basis. And we've been looking at, in our classes, right? How are we building those, you know, collaboration and cultural competency, and I'm going to forget one now.
No, it's okay. But
you know, critical thinking, all those types of things. But then also how those skill sets kind of work. And since we have such a kind of high-powered intellectual, it's not even academic, because I think the thing about Newark Academy is that we really have a lot of kids. Yes, they want to go to the top school, and they have that drive, and their parents have the drive, right? But they're also, there's like a real high level of intellectual curiosity. I have so many students who just want to take a class or who just read something. I was talking to a student the other day who I used to teach who is actually leading she's on the Overlook Junior Board and she's involved in public health and she's about to, she's organized a panel with some other people about teen health, mental health, and there's like service attached to it. And she was talking about her philosophy class, they're learning about Judith Butler, and she's like, yeah, so I went back and read Phyllis Schlafly's articles from last year, and I'm like, why would you do that? She's like, oh, it's just interesting, I think it'd be, like, it's just for the learning part of it, right? So we have a lot of kids at NA who fit in that model. And so I think that really helps us focus on those skill sets and service learning specifically, it's not a one-off, right? So we try, even though it's called a community service program, we try not to fall into that kind of traditional model of community service, which is kind of one and done. And there is a place for that. So I'm not saying that that is a bad thing. And certainly, you know, talking about exposure, like early on, like having kids think about, you know, my son's in elementary school, having kids think about like, oh, what does recycling look like? Okay, let's have a trash pickup day. Or, you know, oh, people are sad and lonely. Let's do color a smile and color something that makes them happy. Like, that's all really important. And we do that kind of work too. But having them look at kind of that, those underlying issues and that passion and the skills, all those different pieces and the competencies they're building to address those things can be done, as you said, with service and service learning more than anything else. And not in the kind of 80s model that some people my age, older, remember where you're like shoving service into a class that didn't make it fit, right? Like, and that's not to say it's problematic. There's all sorts of research out there that says just doing service, even a requirement, is more likely to mean you'll do it later. But I think when it's really connected into the learning, the kids get more out of the learning, they get more out of the skills, and they're, as you said, they're happier and they're less stressed because they can see why it matters, right? Why does algebra matter? Oh, here's this example.
Right. Right. And then, I mean, and the cool thing about it is like, you know, you can do it together. Mm-hmm. Like if it's popular, I mean, you know, again, in that, at that age group, you only just want to be doing what everybody else is doing. Yep. So if it's kind of mandated and everybody has to do it, then it's like not, you know, you're not uncool if you're doing it because you know, everybody's doing it. Right. So that's, you got to get the mental state in there and all that. So that's true. Well, the other thing that I love too is the reflection piece, like, cause that's so important, like doing it, but also, you know, like you said, like digesting it and thinking about it and then writing that down. And then that probably offers a kind of a workbook or a, you know, for the future students to be like, oh, well, look at what they got out of this. And, you know, right. Do you share those or how's it?
Definitely. So I think reflection, I mean, I think other people in the service, the community service, service learning world would make this argument, not even would have and have books about it. So there's definitely research out there. But the reflection is like the key piece to all of it, because if you do it and you don't think about kind of what was that experience like and what went well and what went wrong and what surprised you and how does it tie to other things, like if you don't do that piece of it, you're really missing out on that learning opportunity, and you're missing out on like even that like feeling you get of like having done something that is meaningful, like is tenfold when you actually think about it, right? Mm-hmm. And it is a requirement, so we get a whole wide variety of reflection. But we do use it. We use them, we publicize them and print them, but we have, speaking to both that kind of social piece you were mentioning and the reflection piece, we have a program specifically for our freshmen as they're learning the system of reporting and the requirements. We work with a peer leadership group that's already on campus, so we're leveraging systems that are already in place. And they not only go over like how do you report and how do you sign on, but good and bad reflections and what do they look like, and then they share some of their reflections, and that's where we get a lot of information, and it's also where I find out about organizations. So students will either tell me, hey, I'm doing this cool thing, or they'll say, hey, I did this thing, how do I report it? And then I go, oh, that's so cool, like can we bring it to school? That actually just happened or is happening this week. We have a student, Caitlin Chi, who is amazing on multiple levels, but she has been working with a group called Happy to Dinner. I think I might have that wrong. But they're an organization that works with elders in the Asian community, providing food and support. And so they have this program where you can write in Chinese and other languages, but we're looking at Chinese since we have a Mandarin program, kind of notes of encouragement that are included in the meal. So similar to Meals on Wheels and stuff. And so she's been doing it, and she was asking, like, you know, who do I write down for my sponsor? How do I get credit? And from that, we are now going to be doing basically a service learning program where she's going to go in and teach the Mandarin 1 class about it, and then they're going to be writing letters and including it. So they're building their skills, right? They're practicing in real time, having to use the language that they're just learning and apply it. And it's allowing us to have that conversation kind of about isolation and COVID. And then currently, right now, it's allowing us to build on the program we've already had on campus about the kind of rise in anti-Asian violence. So we've already had multiple community discussions. We've had a discussion that just was kind of like letting people talk about it and identifying it. We've had another discussion that was about the history of it. And so this allows students to, you know, take some action and see some action. And it'll be interesting to see, but oftentimes we'll then have a student go, oh, well, I can do this at home. How do I get involved? And then they'll do it on their own, like outside of the classroom. So, and it's, again, it's socially, it's with other people. It's everyone's doing it. So it doesn't feel like, oh, that weird thing. And I would say you know, by senior year, the vast majority of our students are doing well beyond the 10 hours, even if they don't always record them, which drives me crazy.
I know.
But it's to them, it's more important is that they're doing it, right? So we have a lot of volunteer EMTs, and we have people who are running their own, you know, nonprofits or are heavily involved in stuff or have continued on with their Bar Bat Mitzvah project from 7th grade and are still doing it in 12th grade. So we're really lucky that we benefit from that as well.
Yeah, no, I think that that's amazing because people are always saying, oh, well, how do you find people for your show? I'm like, there's a gajillion nonprofits out there. Like, literally, I have a conversation or I read an article or I see a video or whatever. I'm, you know, it's there's that's what I'm saying. There is so much available and so many ways to get involved. Like, really, you know, it's you really have to work hard not to find something that either fits your skill set or push you out of your comfort zone or, you know, and it's all community based. Like, you know, if you're lonely, you know, this is the way to go, you know, this is.
Well, and I think there's a lot of stuff that's developed post pandemic, specifically like mutual aid societies. So we've been doing some work. I've been doing some work on my own in my own community because I try to live what I'm telling my kids students should do, right? As much as I can being a parent and a teacher and everything
else.
But there's a lot of mutual aid societies that either were in existence or have developed. So we work with Mutual Morris, which is in Morristown. We've been doing some work with them. There's the Montclair Mutual Aid Society. And it's everything from, you know, maybe it's recently we just did a diaper and wipes drive. We also did a menstrual product drive created to that. So it can be something as simple as a drive, but then there's also opportunities to get involved in conversation. So our students, I believe, are going to be meeting with some of the students from Montclair High School and talking about menstrual equity. They've been having some issues in getting the free menstrual products that were donated to the school actually in the school for a variety of reasons.
Oh, wow.
So it's interesting to see that collaboration. And then once kids get talking, they create their own networks and their own organizations and sometimes bring in their parents to that conversation. So I think regardless of your age, there's something available, and it's certainly not something just for like to get involved like when you're retired or when you're younger, right? I kind of feel like that's often what you see. I'm an elected official in my town, and that's sometimes what we see is that people who feel like they're going to serve on the Chamber of Commerce or the board or the borough council or what have you feel like they have to be, you know, older. But that's not necessarily the case.
No, it's completely changing, right? I mean, there's so much going on right now, but with in the nonprofit world, like because you mentioned social entrepreneurship. So 20 years ago, when Room to Read started, that you know, John Wood was one of the first social entrepreneurs. But now, you know, like there's been a lot of blurring between you know business and social enterprise, and it's because it's a whole same skill set. Like someone told me, the only difference between a corporation and a nonprofit is the tax status, basically. And you know, and traditionally people, but it's a mindset, it's a professional, you know. So there's so much happening in the nonprofit sector. So there's like podcasts bursting on the scene and seminars and workshops. And I mean, it's so exciting.
I agree. And it's been interesting to watch our students engage in that, especially because of COVID. I mean, we talk about right now, like what's different and what's changed because of the pandemic. And we've had an opportunity since we're not doing as much direct service to kind of look at our program specifically in light of some of the equity work and kind of the dual pandemic of the racial reckoning that we've seen in the country as well as the pandemic. But we've seen a lot of kids who are getting involved in taking classes and doing things that they never would have done and kind of building on that opportunity. But there's that overlap. That's what we work with. We have I have a community service council of students where I'm our student leaders, and we have a publicity group, and they are in charge of our social media. And like that's a skill. I mean, I remember learning that because when I was in nonprofits, it was like just developing. I don't even think like Instagram was out back when
I know, right?
But we're teaching kids how to do it and really thinking about it and taking time to have kind of not only lessons just generally about what we want to publicize, but how do we do this? What's the best way to do this? And does this format look good? And so those are kind of skills that I feel like our students are going to take on and can use at a nonprofit or a corporation or
Whole new sector. There was the one kid on the podcast, I think he was at George Washington University, and he started Butter. It's like a peer-to-peer fundraising, but for I forget for all kinds of things, and it's an online platform, whatever. And they have butter ambassadors, so like they've made it fun and playful, and like you know, it's so interesting to see all these generations converge. You know, because as I said, you know, yes, you can be retired and volunteer, but you can be in the middle of your career and either use the career skill sets that you have to help a nonprofit or develop your other skill sets, because the true leaders are the, you know, leaders of corporations and other, they're connectors, and they have multiple skill sets that they're good at. You can't be like a, I mean, yes, there's certain people that are, you know, I'm good at accounting and that's my lane and I'm staying in it, or I'm good at engineering, whatever, that's fine. But the people that want to expand their skill sets, I mean, volunteering is a way to do it. And helping a nonprofit, because you can learn. It's almost like you learn in a safe, padded environment, because you know you're not gonna, you know, like one little decimal point's not gonna lose gazillions of dollars. You know, whatever you can. It's a more, you know, wholesome, free, exploratory kind of environment.
Yeah. And a lot of nonprofits, and I think service programs too, and we try to do this too, are also more supportive of making those mistakes, right? Yeah. So like
it's not so rigid.
I always talk about to kids, like, we're going to mess up, right? We're right now looking at, last year, we're really focusing on our connection to Newark, right? We're Newark Academy. We moved out in 64. Like, there are so many historical reasons for that. White flight, neighborhood, like, all the different ways of looking at it, right?
Yes.
And so we can talk about it and have that conversation, because we're always trying to get to the root of the problem and be as real as possible. But we're going to make mistakes. So our kids, the council during our month of action, which is in January, led a conversation about white saviorism, and can we avoid it, and can we not, how does that work, what does that look like? And the point that we started out with is there's no answer to that necessarily, right? That it's hard and it's complicated and it's messy, and we're going to do stuff that doesn't work, right? And I, as the director, am I going to do something that I think is right and the impact is going to land problematically? And then that's not okay, because obviously the impact is a problem, but you want to recognize it and learn how to move forward. And it's hard sometimes to model that in an academic environment, because every test, everything feels like, oh, now I'm not going to get into college, or now this is going
right.
to be bad, right? And I talk about this in my APUS class, like, that's not the case. Like, there's lots of opportunities, like, that's not the case. But for some reason, it feels kind of less stressful when you're in that kind of serving environment and talking and like looking at that stuff. So I agree with you. There's like lots of that opportunity to kind of like learn new skills, and in order to learn new skills, you have to mess up to really like kind of apply them.
Yeah. And you've got to, you have more space to be creative, and you have the freedom without the pressure.
Exactly.
Right. So then, and that's like the best, where you're not, you know, so, well, we've talked a lot about so many things, and we have a long way to go, but I'm going to stop for just a quick break and we'll be back.
For over 50 years, Hunterdon Medical Center has been a leader in delivering comprehensive medical and health services to our community. Our staff is committed to providing the highest quality of care to our patients. If you need a physician, we can refer you to over 300 of the best. Call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Are you in business, not a member of the chamber? Come to the Hunterdon County Chamber Expo to see what it's all about and meet other business owners. Enjoy the restaurant showcase and enter to win the door prize just for business entries. The Chamber offers special benefits for new memberships during the Expo. So join us at Next Level Arena on Case Boulevard in Flemington on Thursday, November 9th from 2 to 7 p.m. Don't miss it.
Hunterdon Medical Center was started by families for families. Inside our circle of care, we offer coordinated care for your entire family, led by our outstanding family medicine physicians and specialists. Hunterdon Healthcare, your full circle of care. If you need a physician, call Hunterdon Medical Center's Physician Referral Service at 1-800-511-4-HMC or visit us on the web at www.hunterdonhealthcare.org.
Good morning. This is Nicole Smith. You're listening to Happy to Help on Hunterdon Chamber Radio. We're on Facebook today at Happy Hunterdon, and we're talking to Sarah Fisher. She's with Newark Academy. It's a academy in Livingston. She's the director of community service and the APUS teacher, and she's got kids and students, and she's all about community. So we're going to dive now into some of the social justice and community programs that Newark Academy is involved in.
Definitely. So I think one of the main switches that were main changes or shifts that we've seen in the service program in the kind of 9 years that I've seen it, and I think this is true in a lot of places, it's not unique necessarily to Newark Academy, is this shift from kind of service and having to serve others to really looking at the intersection between community engagement, community service, and various equity and inclusion and social justice pieces. And so that's one of the things we've been focusing a lot on this year. The past couple of years, we've been working on trying to get a community conversation started around different issues. And we've tried, obviously, in the 9 years, a variety of ways to do this. But 3 years ago, we started really kind of choosing one theme and developing specialty programming around it that incorporated different groups. We started looking at poverty and income inequality our first year, since we already did so much program around homelessness, around food insecurity. It seemed like a really good fit. And then last year, we looked at and took on our relationship to Newark and having been in Newark, as we were saying before, and how we switched and what does that look like, and the problem with the fact that the community service program is one of the main ways that we connect back with the city, right? Like, that's good in some ways, but it's also a problematic lens, especially if we have students from Newark, if we ever see Newark as like the place to serve when we're from the suburbs, that sets up a power dynamic that that at least needs to be acknowledged. So and then this year we're looking at how we can leverage like service to fight inequity. It's a little bit broader of a theme, but considering COVID and we had no idea what exactly that year was going to bring, we've been kind of looking at that. But through that, we've really focused on this idea of developing community partnerships. And I think this is personal to me too. Being from New Orleans and watching so many, I worked in the nonprofit. I worked actually for a literacy program, Literacy AmeriCorps. So I have obviously lots of, you know, affection for literacy programs. It was focused on adult learning, specifically GED, TAB, which is the test you take. You know, we had a host of people, as well as family literacy and other pieces. But one of the things that I felt after the storm is, after Katrina, sorry, for us it's the storm, everyone
right,
else is
working. Sandy.
We're here at Sandy. And I'm sorry, I feel like maybe I brought that on since I moved from one place to the other.
It's your fault.
I know. But one of the things I really felt is there was a lot of people outside the community coming in and like telling us what we should do, mm-hmm. and saying stuff about the community that mm-hmm. maybe some of it was true and we needed to face, but a lot of it wasn't, right? Mm-hmm. Or it just wasn't as nuanced as it could be. And so one of the ways, I think the best ways to kind of combat this anywhere, is the idea of really going to the organizations that are in the community mm-hmm. addressing the problem and starting from a place of how can we help you and what do you need, versus here's all the skills we have, we're going to come in and do it, right? Like, that's that model that's like so problematic. And we see that a lot. We have an immersion program at NA, so you're required to do some sort of immersive experience. And it could be a cultural immersion. You know, France and Spain and China specifically, because those are the languages we offer.
Right.
It could be a wilderness immersion. So we've had people go out to the West and all different locations. And then you could do a service. It's service and culture. So currently there's not opportunity to do like an immersion program necessarily in the United States. But you see this sometimes problematically in these like voluntourism or like pay a lot of money for your child to go to feed you. We try to avoid those programs, obviously, for our immersion, but they're out there. So it's this idea that's the commonplace idea in the industry is like doing with versus doing for.
Mm-hmm.
And the way we've tried to do that is really develop some kind of key community partnerships in Newark that we are consistently working with.
Mm-hmm.
And so we work with the Apostles House, which is an emergency shelter for families in crisis. And so they have a couple of facilities and some long-term living, but they really help families who are facing homelessness or housing insecurity, food insecurity, a variety of things. We work with the Covenant House, which is located in New Jersey, pretty extensively. We've done a lot of solidary sleepouts, some of our highlights of our programming. I'm actually on one of the program boards now because we're pretty involved. Actually, back in the day when I was in third grade, it was the first organization I raised money for.
Oh, wow.
I didn't know what it was at the time. But, so I have a kind of really long history working with the Covenant House. And then we're just developing through actually our Parents Association, who is doing more and more service and looking for opportunities to kind of model community engagement, which I think is awesome. They developed a partnership with the I Have a Dream Foundation and the 13th Avenue School. And so that's kind of a new partner that we're kind of trying to develop as a more wholly institutional partnership. So it's not just kind of the service standpoint. There's conversations between different parent groups and the opportunity for parent groups to meet, because parents are parents, right? It doesn't matter where you are. Mm-hmm. And yes, you're facing different obstacles, but, you know, I talk to other people with 7-year-olds and I just want to hear that the struggles I'm having and the highlights I'm having and the crazy range of emotions that 7-year-old has is normal. So I think kind of there's a variety of that development, but that's one of the main ways we're really looking at is developing these partnerships institutionally and also for our students. So we have kids who have served with the Apostles House, for example, since 6th grade in normal years. So we have a holiday party every year that has actually been going on for over 20 years, not with the Apostles House, with various organizations. So it's one of the first programs that started at NA that was service-based. Mm-hmm. We actually bring a bunch of the Apostles House families normally to campus. Santa visits, because I have, you know, Santa on my speed dial, as my younger son knows. Very lucky to know Santa and his elves. But what happens is our students serve as servers. So there's a family meal that is served. They serve as servers, so they step up and learn that. Some of them have never done that before. Some of them obviously do it as a job. So talking about skills, it's like that in alone and of itself.
And it's terrifying for some people just to walk up to a table and be, what would you like to drink?
And they don't even have to do it. They just have to bring the one meal. And still, we have to have kind of a pep talk beforehand and like skills talk beforehand. But we also have, you know, like a baby room. So people who have younger babies can have an opportunity, even if it's just for a few hours, to like not have to be with their child and have some fun on their own. We open up the gym, what have you. So we have, and the 6th graders don't necessarily serve at that event, but they've helped build decorations and make, cards that we send to every family. So they've been involved since that all the way through 12th grade. It's really interesting to see, even have some students who, we have a senior project program at the end of the year. So once our seniors leave in May, they then spend up to at least 30 hours and then beyond kind of working on a senior project. We have lots of people who are looking at like, oh, I really love the Apostles House. Is there something I can do either with them or like that, right? So we try to build this partnership so that even if you're not always involved or if it's kind of you're only involved for a few years, you know that NA is committed to this long-term partnership.
Yeah.
And they can see that that's like an important piece.
And
I think that's been really interesting this specifically with Apostles House this past year, because we have had so many challenges of how to connect,
right?
Despite the pandemic. So in the spring, they reached out to us in partnership with some of their other organizations and really needed a kind of tutoring program, homework help program.
Yeah.
So we did that. It was kind of spotty, who had internet, who didn't, who was going to show up. And we worked with it. And our students just worked with it and had conversations about what does that look like. I think it's really helpful. Mm-hmm. Not only to the students at the Apostles House, the kids who are there, but also to our students kind of learn those skills, flexibility, and have conversations of what it looks like. It was great. It was a lot of fun. And then speaking of literacy, at the end, each student who participated got like a huge bag of like summer reading books summer activities they could do.
Good.
And then this year we've kind of gone back with a variety of programs as Newark schools are open. They're not open. What might happen, right? So so that's been really interesting. But I think that's one of the main ways that we'll be doing some of that work.
Yeah, and you brought up a good point where I think there's been multiple examples of, people want to help, but they want to help in the way they want to help, but not in the way that's needed. And you need to talk to them. So the room to read, the thing we talk about all the time is that John Wood said from the get-go, we're not sending a bunch of Americans over to the other countries in Asia and Africa to boss them around. We're there to learn from them. And like all of the people that work for Room to Read in those communities and countries are native speakers. They know the culture. They know the people. They know the problems. So it's from their perspective and what they know they need to, right? So and the same thing with when Zuckerberg gave $100 million to Newark. And 5 years later, the test scores went down like that because they just brought in all these consultants from New York City to boss people around when Newark knew what they needed. They, they had the funds, but then it all just got funneled into New York white collar consultants. So people don't realize that people know what they need. You need to ask them, right?
Exactly.
And then figure out how to help them, right? It's like,
then you can't really figure out to help them unless you can clearly articulate the skills that you have to offer, right? So then that brings back the whole idea of having students focus on those outcomes and skills. Like, am I going to be building, like I engaged this activity, what did I build? Not only did I, talk and meet people, but I engaged, let's say, in teamwork and collaboration. We haven't officially figured out what our 5 skills are. We're in the process of that, but let's say it's teamwork and collaboration is certainly one that comes up. Being able to say, oh, here's how that helped. And here's how I was worked in collaboration and teamwork with the people I was serving, right? That there was a give and take, and that there is actually, it shouldn't necessarily be this power dynamic where like, here I have everything and I'm giving it to you.
No.
It should be, no, we're both going to get something from it, right? So yes,
work
I might
together.
Be serving for me,
like
but,
together.
We're, yeah, but we're going to talk about, you know, we're going to talk about things as I'm working at the soup kitchen. I'm going to learn from you and what have you. So I think that's really important, that kind of piece. And if you can articulate your skills, then when they say, hey, this is what we need, then it's easier for you as a volunteer or us as an organization to say, okay, well, we can do this and this, but I can't overpromise this. But I can work on it. We can see what we can do, but I can't overpromise that.
Yeah. Communication is the key, right?
Yeah.
And communication is always a challenge, right?
Exactly.
I mean, So, well, I do, since I love literacy so much, you did mention that you do some kind of like, you know, part story time partner, yep. Newark Academy Reads, whatever it is. I'd love to hear more about that.
Definitely. So after the pandemic happened last spring, we moved to a model where we were doing essentially a service challenge a week, which was awesome and not sustainable, but that's okay for the time. It was excellent. And one of those challenges we work, or one of the organizations we work with is called the Student Wishlist Project. And they're a local, actually a Newark Academy family happens to be the woman who's the executive director, but they're a local organization that helps helps students collect specifically supplies, right? So we had partnered with them for our drive for the Midnight Run the year before, so it helps, you know, make your own kind of wish list and kind of organize what those supplies are and get them sent. So it does some of that work, but they also started to branch out with their partner organizations. And one of the things they really needed was stories online. And kind of not just like the professional stories that you can get, but kind of easy access YouTube, like one-to-one stories where kids are getting the chance to be read to or having interaction, even if it was watching on the screen with someone else, right?
Zoom or was it a video that was posted?
It was a video.
Okay.
So these are videos. We did do Zoom reading with Apostles House during our tutoring homework help.
Okay.
And then we also have something called Family Night that we've done once or twice where our students will read various books to different groups, and then that kind of, in theory, ideally, the theme of those books then relate to a movie that they show, and they have like a big family movie night with pizza and stuff afterwards. Mm-hmm. So it's like a family event, but it's also related to literacy. From that and from that partnership and our experience with that, but our partnership with 13th Avenue School and I Have a Dream Foundation, one of the needs that they identified was a kind of reading program. And again, it's video reading, but it's, the goal is to bring the book to life, right? So it's not just like I'm going to come in and read, but I'm going to bring it to life because they usually have parents and volunteers who are coming in to read to build literacy and a love of literacy, and they can't do that. And so what's interesting about that is the school provided us with the 50 titles that they needed to start with. So it wasn't like we're just going to pick whatever books we want to read, right? It was very specifically, here are the titles that our kids want to read or that we're using in our curriculum or that we want them to have access to for whatever reason. That Newark Academy Parents Association provided the books for us, which was really helpful. And then students are able to sign up and read a book, right, and bring it to life. And we actually started this. We do a Martin Luther King Day of Service that we've done for years, but it's gotten bigger and bigger in the past couple of years as we've partnered with the Office of Equity and Inclusion and the Black and Latino Family Network. And so one of our service projects this year was actually bringing some of those books to life, you know, with a group of people who met over Zoom, who are trying to figure out how to do this, which is really interesting. We had three or four books that were able to do that, and watching those books and watching different people read and seeing how other people read, I think is really helpful to think about, you know, how do you get kids engaged in literacy? How do you get them to love learning and love reading? Well, you have to not only read to them and show them the world that they could see when they read, but also, like, bring it to life.
You can read monotone, but you could read like a broadcast journalist, right? I mean, because, you know, if you're only exposed to one way of reading and it's maybe doesn't resonate with you, then
And I think it was really interesting to listen to the videos and to see it. My husband and I both read to my son very differently, right?
It's
interesting when I hear him, I'm like, oh yeah, there he is reading, and versus myself. And I think it's also important, we have conversations too, both of us have learning disabilities, right? Like, I was held back in second grade because I could not read aloud, so it stressed me out forever. And so, but it provides an opportunity to have that conversation with students, and which is an equity and kind of equalizing piece. It's like, this is hard, right? Like, so for some people, you can't just pick up a book and read. But if you can do that, to kind of share that share the struggle and conversation about that, is just an opportunity for kids to say, oh, I like to see the mirror, right? To see themselves reflected. Oh, I also struggle with reading. It's okay. She can do it now. Or
You're not the only one.
You're not the only one. Yeah. Which I think is a lot of that communication and collaboration piece of service, right? Is that you're not alone.
Well,
right?
And that's with everything. Everything in life. Like, nobody wants to be alone. Mm-hmm. Like, I mean, you know, you don't want to be like, I'm the only one in the whole world struggling with this. No. Yeah. Doesn't matter what it is. Yeah.
Doesn't matter. There's always somewhere else. And that's what I think a lot of the service opportunities, you know, relate to. That's our teen mental health program that we're doing. A lot of the, you know, the letters and notes is that simple, you know, you're not alone, like, we're here, right? The Spanish classes have been doing for a couple of years now, and this year, our Mi Casa club came in and taught the classes. The notes that we put into the Stamp Out Despair, and they're just, hey, friend, like, you're not alone, you're here, someone's thinking of you, right? Like, even though you're in detention, even though this is a hard situation for you, like, you're not forgotten in the system, even though it may feel like that, because it's a system, right? And systems can feel very lonely when you're in it, regardless of any of the politics behind it, regardless of whether you should or shouldn't be wherever, right? That just that human contact is really important. So yeah, you're practicing Spanish and you're getting to write, but you're also having a chance to say, you know, hey, you're not alone. Someone's with you. Someone knows you're here. Someone's thinking about you. And then to think yourself, like, oh, should I maybe reach out to my grandmother or my friend who I haven't talked to? Because that's usually what happens with me. I'll do something like that, and I'll be like, oh, I haven't talked to so-and-so for a while. I should just
No, I mean, and that's what I've been trying to do. But I'm still a very big proponent of, like, the, you know, the hard card, like, you know, the mail system in a tangible card or a tangible note or a tangible letter. No batteries required. Like, you know what I mean? No charge required. So I definitely love that whole thing.
No, I think that's been great. I think that's one of the things we've even done with our advocacy program, thinking about that tangible piece. Like, yes, we've done online petitions and online letter writing, but one of the things, again, our students are amazing, and so they have their own passions. So the Green and Blue Committee is very active. They actually have, like, a big eco summit they're running. It's just this weekend. They've done it for a couple of years, bringing in different speakers and stuff. But one of the pieces they've also been doing the past couple of years is letter writing campaigns and in-person letter writing. Like, so yes, you can do it online,
right?
But also, like, what does it look like? And when we can get together, right? And we can be in space, just sit and to do that at the same time as someone, even if you're all writing very similar things, it's just the idea of being able to talk about, oh, what did you write and how did that happen, and physical writing of it and, like, mailing it and sending it.
And just being together, there's a collective energy that, you know, that's great.
That you definitely get, as you said, in a less stressed way, through in a more community-based, because by definition it's community, right? Community service. Right. A more community way in a service kind of setting than you maybe do in, like, a competitive academic setting.
Right. I know. That's perfect. Well, and that leads right into, so we all know that Earth Day is April 22nd. Yep. So I'm sure there's a lot of stuff going on that. But right after that, April 23rd through 25th is Global Youth Service Day, or days, where it's ages 5 to 25. And because I get all the emails from YSA.org, which is Youth Service America.
Yep.
So, I mean, there's all kinds of ideas. They have a gazillion resources on their website. You've got Points of Light. You've got DoSomething.org. You've got, so why don't you, I haven't even allowed you to tell people, like, how do they, you know, if they want to look at Newark Academy, kind of give a plug for the school and where they can find you. It's like, well, no, seriously.
Definitely. Well, you can follow us on Instagram and Twitter @NA_service. Sorry, hadn't said that out loud for a while. We have actually pretty active, we've been on spring break, so it's a little less active, but normally a pretty active Instagram account where I also try to publicize other events, right? So if Room to Read has something that's going on, I've definitely posted stuff there. If I hear about other organizations, and certainly around Earth Day, there's a lot going on. There's a whole Earth Month in New Jersey, and I don't know what it is. I want to say it's, like, at New Jersey Earth Day 2021. But,
oh, wow.
I have to look it up, but I've just come across it in some of my other channels. So we post those kind of things, and then we also post what we're doing. Certainly, if you're interested in the school, you can go to Newark Academy.
.org.
I just Googled it all of a sudden. I was like, I'm not sure. I should know the email immediately. And look there. We do have a community service page that tells you kind of what we're doing and has feeds and programs and information that comes out about the kind of that kind of piece, which I think is important. Of course, like, I'm on LinkedIn somewhere. I have no idea where my LinkedIn code is, but if you want to contact me directly, you're always welcome to do that as well. But I can be reached through through the school too. And if you are out there and you have a nonprofit and you want us to know about it, like, please reach out, because we're always looking for new opportunities, and we're really looking for opportunities all across the state. That's been one of our focuses. One of the drawbacks of me not being from New Jersey, although it means I don't get involved in the central North, South, does it exist argument.
Taylor Ham.
Taylor Ham.
I'm not from here either.
Who knew that was a thing? I mean, we had the same things in Louisiana. They're just obviously different. But one of the drawbacks is I'm not as familiar, obviously, with the full nonprofit landscape. And so we're always looking for opportunities, because we pull from kids. We pull kids from across New Jersey. Some of our kids come, you know, an hour and a half away. Sometimes their travel time is, like, shocking. Shocking to me to get there. And so, you know, Sussex County, for, like, all over the place. So we're always looking for opportunities, because I think it's really important for kids to realize, and for everyone to realize, that service doesn't have to be in another country. Service doesn't have to be in another specific area that is somehow less than in the world, right? It doesn't have to be in an urban environment. Doesn't, like, there is a need in every single community in some way, regardless of what it is. And there are people who are facing these challenges. Even at Newark Academy, right, we talk about food insecurity, but we have kids at Newark Academy who are facing food insecurity, right? Like, yes, it's an independent school, and you have to pay to go there. But we have a really, really robust financial aid program and scholarship program. And so we have all sorts of different kids and families who are dealing with all sorts of different issues. And so that kind of realizing that everyone is going through a struggle is kind of an important part. So certainly, definitely follow us and, like, reach out, because I love hearing about what other people are doing. Plus, if I get retweeted, I get really excited.
Yeah.
Because I'm old, and that's
okay,
exciting.
Okay, I know.
Me.
Okay, well, I'll retweet you. I'll do that. Well, that's exciting. Well, and I think, too, like, you've said it before, you let the students bring new opportunities and partnerships, and because that's where it has to come from. I mean, it has to come from the students, which makes sense. And then the other thing, one of the students commented that they love the global mindset. Yeah. I mean, it's important, you know, again, it's choice. What's more important to you, local or global? Like, where's your mindset? What, you know, so, because there's undoubtedly you can do, you know, if you're talking about fundraising and impact, you can do way more with less money in other parts of the world. Like, you have a huge impact, right? But there, that's not to take away from the, you know, the 45-cent letter or whatever a stamp is today. You know, that can have huge impact with a tiny, you know, with a stamp, basically, because you're investing your time and your emotion and, you know.
Well, and it's also, too, about, you know, you have to be really careful. And we talk a little about this with charity pieces, although we don't really talk about kind of donating as much, and certainly not this year, because we haven't really been doing much fundraising. But you have to be really careful, too, right? Because locally, regionally, nationally, globally, there's a whole wide variety of people and organizations who are doing things, but what percentage of your donation goes to what programs? And that's what you often hear about this with the Red Cross. People get upset with the Red Cross.
Oh,
and
yeah.
I have to say, I worked with the Red Cross, not for the Red Cross, but worked with the Red Cross. And I always think, and having been a volunteer, like, coordinator, like, that was my actual job, is, like, you actually have to pay people to run these programs too, right? So there's that kind of conversation that I talk about. And so, you know, I think, yes, you can, your impact of your dollar may mean something, or may mean something more somewhere else, but also it may be harder to actually get to the people, you know, depending. So you have to do your research really, really well.
So you do
have that
to do
critical
research.
Thinking comes in. But I think for us, you know, we have the IB program. We have this kind of commitment to global mindedness.
Okay, so IB, you have to explain.
International Baccalaureate.
Right, which is?
So it's similar, like, to AP, which is Advanced Placement, but it's a global system. It's developed in Europe, a European system originally. But and it really focuses on, they have something called the IB Learner Profile, which builds on a lot of the same skills we have, but it is this idea of kind of deep dives into material, extended kind of research and critical thinking, and then these kind of open-ended questions, at least for the humanities. I don't teach the other pieces, but the IB Humanities program is a lot more kind of broad, open-ended research questions, essay questions. You have to come up with your own research. It's that kind of skill building, but again, at this kind of essentially college level or a higher level. Learning. So we have that, and we have that commitment. We have immersion as a requirement. But I think a lot, in the service program, a lot of what we're talking about isn't necessarily the global mindedness of serving somewhere else, but looking at, again, those root issues. And so what is the local, regional, national, and global impact of what that issue is, right? So we always try to kind of walk kids through that through those different kind of circles and rings, right? Like that this is an issue, like food insecurity is a huge issue, right? It's grown immensely. I think I want to say the Community Food Bank put out a report that I read a couple months ago, so I might be quite a little bit wrong on the statistics, but I think it went from like 1 in 9 kids in New Jersey facing food insecurity to like 1 in 5. Yeah. It's almost like a 40% to 50% right. increase mm-hmm. since the pandemic, right? Mm-hmm. And that's just kids and other families. So yes, that's a problem nationally. It's a problem locally, like in Livingston, where we are located. There are families in need, mm-hmm. right? And it's statewide. But also, like, what does that look like? What does food insecurity look like in another country, right? In somewhere else, and what are the, you know, if you're in a country that is not as industrialized, like what are the different issues with kind of a more rural agricultural-based society or even different parts of our country. So having those conversations, I think, are really important. And that's one of the ways we, you know, kind of try to do that in the service program, even if we can't actually go to somewhere else. Mm-hmm. I'm just kind of thinking of those connections. Now, we do have programs that we have a program that goes to Guatemala normally.
Yeah.
That partners with Homes to Homes out of Morristown. We have students who
Houses to Homes.
Houses to Homes. Yes, thank you. I knew that was
Yeah,
wrong.
But no, she was on my show, Judy. Oh my gosh, nice. This is amazing.
Yeah, so Aww. We work yeah, they work with them. We've been doing that program for years. So we definitely have those kind of pieces. But again, I think for us it's that looking at that it doesn't actually have to be that choice between local and global. I mean, it does when you're donating, right? But that it shouldn't necessarily be it. So if you're passionate about an issue
right.
globally, donate, get involved, but also look how that issue may be impacting people nearby, because I think right. that also challenges some of our perceptions as Americans, especially I'll speak as a white middle-class woman living in the suburbs in my own house, right? It challenges that, like, somehow it's somewhere else and it's not as nearby. And I think that always looking for that connection of like, oh, I'm passionate about education. What does that look like mm-hmm. in other places and here, and how can I get involved in both? Is a really kind of important piece that we're trying to do it. And I think a lot of the global mindedness too that we are really looking at is that it related to Earth Day and related to eco justice and okay. environmental stewardship, which we have like a ton of programming.
Well, that's why I laugh. I laugh because like it seems like the teens and tweens and whatever, they're all about like save the earth and whatever. But I'm like, they're the ones that use the Gatorade and the Minute, you know, they're the ones that are using those, buying those drinks ad nauseum. And I'm like, hello, lead by example, people.
I know. Well, it's interesting though. One of our students who was involved in the Green and Blue Committee was telling another student, I like heard this through the grapevine. She's a senior now. She's like, when I first came to NA, we were focused on like not running your water when you're brushing your teeth and not using bottles, right? She's like, now our eco summit is focused on indigenous land rights and clean water and how that's in Newark. Like, that's definitely more of that social justice, like larger piece. And that's right. not to say that we're not talking about recycling and not using bottles and mm-hmm. we aren't having campaigns to use, you know, refillable water bottles and that type of thing. But we're talking about how that, like what communities impact it. Like when you throw a bottle away, you might not see it, but it has to go somewhere. So right. even if it's recycled, it has to go somewhere. So right. what does that look like? So it's been really interesting to kind of see that those kids shift and how they're changing. And what
it's a bigger issue, right? Yeah. And I mean, they're growing and learning and it's very cool because it's just, the tip of the iceberg, right?
Yep. Exactly.
Tip of the iceberg. So what have we missed? Like, so the thing that I wrote down from the website is the three goals of the community services: to build lifelong passion for service, mm-hmm. to have service as a springboard for self-awareness and self-actualization, and to integrate service and learning. So I think we've covered a lot of that, right? So yeah. What else, anything that we missed or any other pieces you want to mention?
No, I think we've talked about a lot of it. I just say, like, you know, one of the things I think is great about my job and what's happened the past couple of years in doing it is that we've kind of developed like a rhythm to the year. And so in the beginning of the year, this year we focus on homelessness and hunger, and specifically we ran our virtual Solidarity Sleep Out, which was this great, essentially a summit on homelessness with all sorts of speakers and panelists, and then kids committing to sleep out and build empathy through that, even though they weren't monitored, which was like shocking this year to me that we had kids who slept out. It was in November. They slept outside, even though it was cold and no one was going to hold them accountable except themselves. They slept in their cars. They slept on basement floors, right? So that they really, I mean, they just went all in, even without the kind of You expect them to go all in when you require them to and you're sitting there doing it with them. Right. But they did it kind of on their own, which was really impressive. So we have kind of events in the fall. Then we have this amazing program that's called the Month of Action, which is run by our clubs. We did it online this year, but I think it speaks to this kind of renewal in January and making MLK Day not just kind of like a singular event. So it's not just like, boom, day of service. As a former AmeriCorps program coordinator, right, we were literally responsible. Part of the charge of AmeriCorps is both 9/11 now and MLK Day being days of service. But like, how do you move beyond the day?
Yeah.
Right? And so the Month of Action really challenges students to get involved and kind of renew our commitment to making change. This year we looked at awakening your inner activist. So like, how can you do things on a small scale, even despite the pandemic, to make positive changes? And it was one of the few times in the year that we had to go remote, and the kids still kind of did it, even though they were remote and again, not held accountably physically. And then in the spring, we have something called Spring Into Service.
No, I love it.
It's a fun little thing to do.
Yeah, no, I mean, and the thing that I love about all your things too is I love the way, like, whoever's doing the branding is brilliant. Like, well, Solidarity Sleep, like, is that you? Or
no, Solidarity Sleep is from the Covenant House, but I have to say, I do think about branding having worked in nonprofits. So talking about skills that that overlap is that I, you know, was responsible for creating the website and getting that stuff out for Literacy AmeriCorps and for our programs. And so I'm constantly thinking about, you know, how does that look? And our students come up with it too on their own. And they will call me out when our names are silly.
Well, yeah, because
spring service is just, it's spring and you're, and there's so many levels there.
But it makes sense. Like, I mean, you know, and it's easy to remember and it, like, it's exciting and whatever, because, you know, again, like going away from all these acronyms, like if you have, you know, something, what, you know, it's, if people don't understand acronyms, they don't remember them. It's too long. It's too cumbersome. So, I mean, in this day and age of a 2 second attention span, you gotta bring it, right? Which, and that's again, the creativity comes in,
exactly.
Right? What resonates?
Yeah. What again? A lot of our kids are doing. That's what our students are doing on the council. They're coming up with that. So.
Yeah. No, I love. I'm writing all these down because they're just so fun. So yeah, follow Newark Academy on Instagram, on Twitter, on Facebook. Look at the website, community service, see of how you can, and your students can implement this. You can do it at your school or your community.
Yeah, and if you're working out of school or with a youth organization, I'm always happy to talk. I've reached out to a million people to say, hey, how are you doing this? Or I saw this program on your website that I really like and have gained so much from that. Many of us who do service learning or service programs are the only one at the school. And so our network is not like, we don't have a department necessarily. So I am happy at any time to talk to anyone else who's interested to say, this is what worked and this is what didn't work. And here's where we did really well. And here's where we fell flat on our face and what to avoid. I think that that's really important to build those networks.
Right. Oh, collaboration is key. And right. Plagiarism is the finest form of flattery, right?
Yes. Especially although don't do it academically. Exactly. As a teacher, I have to feel like, make sure you use your citations.
That's true. All right. Well, thank you so much. It went so fast. We could talk for hours.
Definitely. But thank you so much for having me. This was really fun.
USA Radio News with Lance Pry.
The Biden administration is considering restarting construction of the U.S.-Mexico border wall started by former President Trump. Homeland Security Secretary Alejandro Mayorkas said during a conversation with ICE employees last week that the administration was considering finishing gaps in the wall. As Governor Gavin Newsom of California faces a likely recall race in November, Caitlyn Jenner is reportedly looking to become the next governor of California. It's being reported that the former Olympic gold medalist and reality television star might give it a go. Jenner, a lifelong Republican, has 18 grandchildren and 10 children. A little-known Los Angeles-based actor was reportedly arrested by the FBI on Tuesday for allegedly running an enormous Ponzi scheme where he duped investors by lying about the success of his film distribution company. 34-year-old Zachary Horwitz, a.k.a. Zach Avery, is accused of cheating investors out of $227 million, USA Radio News.
Woke culture. It's choking America, erasing our history, threatening our freedoms, our laws, and even our police. Now, Grant Stinchfield exposes the secret woke agenda and the hidden players behind this very dangerous movement. Watch Stinchfield tonight at 8 p.m. Eastern on Newsmax TV as he reveals the real dangers to you and your family.
Everyone is talking about Stinchfield because each night he gives you the cold, hard truth you need to know. Newsmax is now America's fastest-growing cable news channel on all major systems. If you don't get it, call your cable operator. Tell them you want Newsmax or you'll switch. Remember, you can get Newsmax free on Roku, YouTube, Zumo, Pluto, Amazon Fire, and smart TVs like Samsung, Sony, Vizio, or LG. It's even free on your smartphone. Just download the free Newsmax app and start watching. So find out about Woke and its dangerous plans for America on Grant Stinchfield tonight. Just tune into Newsmax TV. It's real news for real people.
In a TV interview on Tuesday, former President Trump reiterated his recent statements objecting to Major League Baseball's recent decision to move the All-Star Game out of Atlanta, Georgia. The league's move was a reaction to Georgia's recently passed voting legislation, which was signed into law by Republican Governor Brian Kemp. Trump suggested Major League Baseball was a woke organization during the interview with Newsmax. He also claimed fans were giving up on America's pastime and again called for a boycott of Major League Baseball. Tiger Woods' car crash was caused by excessive speed, but there are many things we might not ever know about the story. The L.A. County Sheriff's Department will release the findings of their investigation Wednesday morning, but it is a bit curious because last week we were told the findings would not be released because of privacy laws. The sheriff is expected to say the cause of the accident lies squarely on speed. St. Louis, Missouri Treasurer Tashira Jones, who has been outspoken in her criticism of the criminal justice system, won election Tuesday and will take over as the first black female mayor in St. Louis. She will be sworn in April 20th. USA Radio News.
Could an ancient mystery be determining the events of our time? Could it reveal the secret of our future? Our recent events.